Very good. So, today is International Women's Day. And one of the things which we did here many years ago, how many years ago was it when we gave bhikkhuni ordination to women in Australia, and I got into did I get into big trouble? But, so why did you do that? Why did a male, a very traditional monk, I am very traditional, believe it or not, why did you do that? And one of the reasons is because you can in Buddhism. We do have rules and precepts, but they are very much guidelines. And what it means is that, as mentioned this in university talks, that Buddhism, or the Buddha, the way he set up this whole system was as a delegated democracy. One of the first, probably it is, I'm pretty sure that this is easily defensible, that the longest standing democratic institution in the world is Buddhism. If you listen to Ajahn Brahmani when he starts teaching the Mahaparinibbana Sutta, this is, you know, record of the Buddha's final days. As you might expect, what about succession planning? Even I was joking earlier with our good President Dennis and Treasurer Boone, and said, Ajahn Brahm, you're getting old. Isn't it time we had succession planning? And when he first mentioned that, I said, what do you know that I don't know? I'm reasonably healthy. What's going on here? Are you trying to bump me off or something? Of course, you'd never do things like that. But, of course, that would be something when the Buddha was about to pass away. Who's going to take over after you? And in just one little sentence, it was just so wise and so powerful, he said, after I'm passed away, there will be no successor. Let the teachings and the training, that will be your leader from here on. And at that, you can see, there was no absolute authority, no infallible judge who had to be followed, even though it went against your deep understanding of what's right and what's wrong. Let the path, the Dhamma, the truth, as you see it, as you know it, as you feel it, let that be your authority. At the same time, you know, we had the delegation. Every little community was autonomous. So, when it came to Bodhinyana Monastery, and we have four amazing women who asked me, can we become bhikkhunis? Yeah, of course, why not? You don't force a person. You don't come and say, okay, you and you, come forward, we'll make you nuns. I'll get you into big trouble with other people. But no, they asked. And one of the reasons why it was controversial, in a sense, was because everybody knew that there's nothing they could do about this. This is the way the Buddha intended it, the way that, you know, you don't have authorities on high in Thailand or in Sri Lanka or anybody. If a person, a group, decides they wish to do it, off they go. And that showed that the hierarchies that sometimes we expect in religions and spiritualities, they are not so solid, not so elite segregated that they can get into the source of trouble which, you know, we have recently, you know, with child sexual abuse, domestic abuse, telling people what to do, and having this your moral choices invested in some other person who just wears funny robes or pointed hats or no hat and no hair and just who lives a slightly different lifestyle. That, why do you invest, you know, your moral decisions with people other than yourselves? And you may have just heard when I was teaching the meditation that it's Buddhas only show the way, give advice, but never will ever compel you to actually to follow that advice. And an example of that, practical, which I've faced many, many times, and sometimes even some monks say, Ajahn, what do you say? You can't say that. So of course I can say this. I know the rules and my obligations, and I was telling Dennis, I also know all the loopholes as well. But you don't use those loopholes, you know, just to get away with things. This is actually use them through kindness, compassion. Quite a few times, you know, Buddhist women, it's International Women's Day, they've come up to me, just, you know, privately, and they've said, I'm pregnant, should I have an abortion? Now, first of all, I often say, why are you asking a man that question? You know, what do I know of what a woman must go through when they're making that choice? And thank you, all the women who've asked me that, many of you. And thank you for at least since like a trusting or feeling that I can be of service. And you know what I tell people? I never tell people evil, evil, bad. You could never say stuff like that. You say that if a person, I can never truly understand what you may go through. I can't. But I can see in your face and empathize as much as possible, feel what you feel, was that it's one of the most difficult decisions you will ever make. And what you need, and that's my advice, is not to be told what to do, but to be helped to make a decision. And this is where the teacher or guide, someone you look up to, not because they're a monk or because they're a nun or because they're a priest or something, because you've seen them many times, you get some trust in them. And also to say that there's four reasons to consider before you make that decision. It's your decision, and I will never make that for you. I can't. It's immoral for me to make that decision for you. But what I can do is to be there and say, never do it, you know, any decision, any moral decision, just out of, you know, personal convenience, wants. It's never, not always about me. It's never about of ill will, because never about stupidity. You find out what is going on, what the possibilities are. But most importantly, never through fear. And that fourth of the things to consider and never follow when you're making a decision, fear, is one of the most important. Never ever sort of follow someone and say, you know, you have to do this or else something bad will happen to you. You'll be cursed, you'll go to hell, you do this. That is encouraging fear. Or I won't speak to you again. Instead, the Buddha wanted you to make a decision based on whatever you can do and to take that fear away, to say that you will always be my friend before and afterwards. I'll always care for you, I'll never excommunicate you, never say bad person, I can't say that. But to say at least fear, that you'll always have a friend. So I'm going to be there for you before and be there for you afterwards. Because it's a decision I can never fathom as a man. But you can see in people, and I've also seen so many people who have, you know, chosen an abortion and felt guilty about it afterwards. And that guilt is also something which is no part of Buddhism. Feeling guilty, I'm a bad person. No. We make choices, it might be wrong, it might be right, but you made the choice, you live with it, learn from it, grow with it. But guilt, punishment, there's no part of this. Guilt and punishment is what we use to control others. So when you have an understanding sort of about just the role of any guide, any leader, it's not to cure you, it's to care for you. And when we have that idea, sometimes when people do ask me questions, what we should do, what do you think of this, what do you believe in that, sometimes I have to be careful. Because yeah, I do have some influence and authorities, but please do not follow what I say. So are you going to follow what I say? By not following what I say? In other words, don't just say, Ajahn Brahm said, therefore. I get into trouble with that. Because sometimes it's not only me who knows the loopholes, it's sometimes your kids. They are very, very smart because they come here, they listen to what Ajahn Brahm says and they use that to their advantage against their parents. They say like that child, I gave that little simile of, in order to have some peace and freedom and rest in your life. Do you ever get everything done? You know, I've just been working really hard the last week. And just, you know, I went to Albany just to check out the properties down there to expand our monastery, just fly in, fly out. That was only yesterday and preparing for an AGM. Only two AGMs. Got the AGM of the Australia Sangha Association in Melbourne next week and a fundraiser for the new monastery over in Melbourne. Sometimes I don't know where I am. Flying all over the world. But anyway, so you work really hard. But nevertheless, you can still care. Care for your body, care for yourself. Care for others. But never ever tell people what to do. To serve. And if you can do things like that, you are actually just having this Buddhist idea of being a guide, being a friend, rather than being a know-it-all who tells people what to do. It's one of the reasons I never like that in other religions, other philosophies. This is right, this is wrong, behave, or you're not my friend anymore. It's one of the reasons why I did make deliberately make friends with people of other religions, other faiths, people who are different than me. However much I could find. Because when you found people who were different than you, it gave me the opportunity to actually to listen and to grow. If you're always with your friends, people who think alike, if everyone in this room was all Buddhist, all Theravada Buddhist, or forest tradition Theravada Buddhists, what else can we say? Theravada Buddhists who follow Ajahn Brahm. Theravada Buddhists what else can we say? Whatever. But wouldn't that be just so narrow and so dangerous to only to hear what supports your point of view? So sometimes it's wonderful just to go out and see other people. Get yourself tested. Find out just how to relate with people who are different than you. And so that means that we are learning. Those people who think they know everything, they are the stupid ones. It's not knowledge, it's wisdom. The growing of the emotions, as I said last week, the feeling. And that's one of the reasons as why that democracy, they're not telling people what to do, but guiding people, and just being guided yourself, you know, by, you know, what people say, how they behave. That is a wonderful way of anybody in any position of authority or leadership to realize that authority or that leadership never allows you to tell another person what to do, to think that you're better than other people, to think that, yeah, we're all equal, but some people are more equal than others. Not to think that, you know, somehow or other that people should exploit others. If a person has some means to feel they're better than others, apart from others, that's where we do get bullying, exploitation, and other terrible things which happen in our societies. Even bullying comes when there are hierarchies. People who have got more power, physical power, clerical power, other power, who use that power to get their own way in spite of what they can feel and see in others. People who know, or rather think they know, but don't really understand. So, when it comes to our Buddhist tradition, if we do stuff like that, we realize that our relationship to the truth is just exploiting the truth for our own ends. Our relationship to others is one of exploitation and ownership. It was never my job to tell women they should be ordained. It was never my job to tell a woman who can't have an abortion, should have an abortion, should do this or should do that. It's never my job to say that, and this was, you know, said years and years ago, that being gay is unnatural and we can cure that. That is not right. And one of the things which shocked me about that years ago was in a little talk I gave at the old Mercy Hospital. I think they changed it now. It's changed the name. By the river in Maylands somewhere. And there was a gentleman who came up afterwards, an elderly gentleman. And he came up to me and just said to me, with pain in his heart, religion has been so cruel to people from the gay, lesbian, transgender community. And there's sometimes when you listen, when you do really open your heart and listen, you can feel other people's pain, their rejection, their exploitation, not being respected. When you can hear that, you have to do something about it. And so for me anyway, it was beginning of, well, how can we be a little bit more inclusive? Not to International Women's Day, but International Those People Are Exploited Day. And so that meant that you could feel, so, what about, as somebody was saying, there are many people here who are LGBTQIA and others. Welcome. Thank you for being here. We learn from one another. As far as the Buddha was actually saying, we should open the door of our hearts to all beings. All beings, animals included. And to human beings. And sometimes I was never... My experience with gay people was almost zero. Didn't know they existed. I was heterosexual and had relationships, good sex. And I say that, and sometimes people just criticize, monks should not say that. Before I became celibate, But it was important for me to have a knowledge and understanding of what intimacy was before you chose celibacy. It's a free choice. And when I heard in a recent Q&A program, when somebody said celibacy is unnatural, defies nature, I thought, come on. That's what they used to say about gays, lesbians. It's unnatural, we can cure it. Free choice. This is why in Buddhism, like everything else, we get advice. We learn how to use that advice to do these things not out of desire, ill will, not out of stupidity, not out of fear, but to do it as a wise decision. Sometimes people like being celibate. It's a choice. It's not defying nature. And now for a Buddhist monk, it's who you are. Just like you ask a person who's, say, transgender, they say, it's who I am. And trying to defy, you know, who you are is sometimes causes huge amounts of problems. One thing which I do object to, and I think you see it in this system, never to allow children to ordain. Even I sort of object, and I get into trouble for this too, to have Buddhist schools. What do you mean, Ajahn Brahm, Buddhist schools? Because if you have a Buddhist school, obviously the people will, you know, if a Buddhist pays for the education, they've got a big Buddha statue up there, of course they will think, my goodness, that you will prefer Buddhism than all other religions, even than atheism. And of course you will influence kids. Oh yeah, but Buddhism is really good. So it's good to influence them in that way. Is it? Sometimes I ask, let's use another analogy. Suppose we had a conservative school run by the Liberal Party. So, or a communist school, or a green school. Sometimes people who like sort of the green ideology, oh, that'll be good. But would it be good? Because what you're doing, you'll always be indoctrinating a person, a young kid, when their brain is malleable, you know, to a certain particular view. So, being an educator myself as a school, as a schoolmaster for 1 year, this, you could see just how people's views, they would influence children. And sometimes influence them in a good way, in a bad way. But it's also a dangerous way as well. So it's one of the reasons why we don't have Buddhist schools. I agree with Richard Dawkins on that one. If a child is not old enough to choose a political party, an ideology for where they want this country or world to go, if they're not old enough to do that, why should they be considered mature enough to identify with one particular religion or another? Sometimes there can be exceptions, but you know, there's many dangers there. So I always think that schools should be non-religious. That's why there isn't a religious Buddhist school in Western Australia. People wanted to try one once, but I never gave my support. Didn't block it, because I can't block things, just give advice. So anyway, that's one of the reasons why, interestingly enough, when there was the accusations of child sexual abuse, domestic abuse, abusing disciples, that the ABC did call me and asked, you know, just trying to do any words on Buddhist abuse. You know what I said at the time? I said, well, it just so happens that the president of the Federation of Australian Buddhist Councils, the peak body, who's actually sitting in the back over there, is a woman. At that particular time, it was just over last year, after last year's AGM, you know, when those of you who were here, you know, saw me resign for 2 or 3 weeks. And then so Venerable Hasapanya was the head of Dhammasara Monastery. She was the spiritual director of the BSWA. So I said, oh, our spiritual director is a woman. And also, she was also the president of the Australia Sangha Association. She still is. That's the organization which she will go to, I will go to Tuesday for our AGM there. And so we had women leaders in all the three, the two peak bodies of Buddhism, and also in the Buddhist Society of West Australia. I said, but anyway, I said that, you know, the idea of like exploitation, spiritual abuse of power, is something which the Buddha foresaw, I think, because he didn't allow that authority structure and did not allow the forced celibacy. You can choose it. As a monk or a nun, you choose. And if you find you made a mistake, people do make mistakes, you can leave at any time. So if a monk falls in love and decides, oh, now I've had enough of being a monk, now I want to fall in love, they can leave. So don't get any ideas, because no, I prefer being a monk, thank you very much. I don't know why you laugh at that. But sometimes, I don't know if I've probably forgotten, this woman once actually just came up to me, she was quite sincere. She said, look, if ever you feel like you've had enough of monastic life, you know, that this is my number. That actually happened, but never mind. Sorry. So, as long as it's a free choice, in other words, you feel comfortable in this role and you're making something of it. And so, for personally, my personal journey, because, you know, I had my girlfriends and intimacy and just saw its benefits and it's also its dangers as well. Because, you know, they're all both there. As those of you who've had relationships, notice the pleasure and the pain, you know, of those relationships, how difficult it sometimes is, how rewarding it can sometimes be, and actually how to do it properly. And you know, that's why you can actually learn as a monk this, you know, the thing about in a relationship. It's not about me, it's not about your partner, it's always about us. Now that idea which you get, which is like real relationship stuff, it's not about, you know, who I am, what I want, what I need. Because that's just too much inside, too much personal wanting. And it's not just exploiting another person. And that sort of child sexual abuse was just so much of exploitation, power, and something which was disgusting. Now, I'm being honest that I never even thought that was possible when I was growing up. My mother and father were very loving and caring. I think I mentioned last week, I think, or somewhere else, just how that was a result of my father being abused himself, physically, not sexually. At least he never told me anything of that sort. Very naive young man growing up. And sometimes that naivety, that idealism, was really important to me. Kids, how could you do that to someone who was vulnerable? But it's not just a child. Sometimes, again, a woman can feel vulnerable. Sometimes a person who's disabled or in a subservient role can feel vulnerable. So that's actually where we do need those checks and balances. I know that sometimes people would they would joke, I just hope it's a joke, and call me spiritual dictator of the BSWA, but even that, you know, just hopefully that can lead, but lead by example, by advice, but never commanding anybody else what to do. please always question. Please always comment. Please always feel you can disagree. Please feel that this Buddhist society is about us. That's why I mentioned to Dennis, that's why we're always calling for volunteers. For joining the committee if you've got, you know, skills in that area and time. Or, you know, that most of the stuff which runs this center, which runs the nuns' monastery, which runs this whole organization, whether it's the Australian Sangha Association or the Federation of Australian Buddhist Council, it's all volunteers. They're volunteers, sometimes even that name, is just like participants, members of the community, people who just, not to join to do something or to pay back some debts they feel that they should pay back because they've been given something from this organization, they want to pay back something. It's not that at all, it's just you're part of this organization. You're part of the monasteries, you're part of the retreat center, you're part of Dhammaloka, you're part of the whole world. So if you're part of things, then sometimes isn't really volunteering. Is it doing a duty? Doing a duty is just like, oh, I've got to get this out of the way. But people do this because they get a lot of fun and joy and happiness being part of an organization. Even just when I went down to Albany a few days ago. Actually, no, sorry. I do so much sometimes I lose sense of time. Or maybe it's because living in the present moment. That was only yesterday. But Venerable Mudu, you know, who was one of the chief movers and shakers down there, was telling the real estate agent who was trying to focus his property that, you know, he said, oh, you know, you should just go and join the local surf club. Because Venerable Mudu was just, you know, a big sort of member of the local surf clubs. I think it was in Sorrento, I think. It was Scarborough or somewhere, in one of those surf clubs. So he knows all those people in that. He said, it's wonderful because you get so much out of it. And you have to pay to be a member of the surf club. But he said, oh, it's just a really good investment. You get so much happiness, joy, friendship, you know, for life. And you're also serving. But you're not really doing serving, you just love doing it. And that's actually what it's like, you know, being a member of any community. It's a volunteering. I think it's not really volunteering. To me, it's exploiting the opportunity to grow and make good friends and have lots of joy and happiness. And to this day, if anyone is depressed, anxious, come and help wherever. There's always some little jobs to do. It's just being part of something. And that gives you so much happiness and joy. Instead of taking the pills. Yeah, you have to take the pills sometimes. Instead of sort of taking counselling, where somebody else is sometimes telling you what to do. But actually, good counsellors never do that. They form a relationship, they listen. And, you know, sometimes it's out of fear, if you do counselling, that you sort of tell people, just you go back to what you're supposed to tell people, what you learned in university, this is what you should do. But no, it's not what you should do, it's just you learn to feel, you know, where another person is, to make contact, and make a relation, not physical, I mean just this spiritual, emotional contact with another person. And just become sort of their friend, rather than their authority. Authority figures usually get into trouble. So, when it's that type of relationship, which you feel welcome, it's a place you can come to. Not a place where you have to live up to certain ideals. That's the other thing. Whether it's a dress code, a sitting code, having to bow, not having to bow. That sort of stuff can sometimes just force of people. Many people say, oh please Ajahn Brahm, can't you tell us what the etiquette is? And they say, the etiquette is to be kind, be sensitive, to relax to the max. That's the etiquette. so people feel welcome here. You know what it is sometimes? I won't say it's a good example. Somebody came here one evening, and I remember they were just over in the corner there, and during the meditation, they laid out, you know, pointing their feet towards the Buddha, and fell asleep and started snoring during the meditation. So a few other people, they disturbed and said, come on, wake up, and you're making a noise. And then afterwards, that became the subject of the talk, if I remember. Afterwards, I said, listen, that person, because they talked to me before, they were going through some really horrendous domestic abuse. And they weren't Buddhists, they were just a human being who was suffering very deeply. And they came here, and just emotionally they felt this place was safe. And they hadn't slept for days, weeks, I don't know. And they came here, they felt safe, they laid down, they relaxed to the max, and they started snoring. Ah, what a wonderful opportunity that was to have a bit of a break, to feel that there is some good in this world, where you're not judged. You can actually, something physical which you really needed, some sort of the place to sort of hold you and be a friend to you. But I thank her because we learned what Buddhist etiquette is. Being kind, not exploiting, not sort of, what's the other thing, stand up. Oh, that woman, she came here once. And she came up and said, it's actually beforehand, how much do you charge to come to a Buddhist center? I said, nothing. And she said, no, you don't understand. And she said, how many dollars do I have to pay, you know, to come in the door? I said, nothing. Listen, Ajahn Brahm, you're not listening to me, she said. How much do I have to cough up to get in here? And I said, nothing. And I remember the beautiful pause she had. I said, what do you get out of this then? And the whole idea of doing something to get something out of it, you know, to exploit people, to, you know, think, what's in it for me? That is what really shook me. I said, look, it's not what's in it for me, it's what's in it for us. The happiness, the joy of just giving. The wonderful idea of just seeing another person, trying to care for them. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work, but you try your very best, you know, to serve, to help, to be a friend, to be a teacher, or whatever you want me to be. And that means that's what we get out of this. Is it volunteering? That's a name we give it, but please understand, is it a teacher? Now, one of the interesting things about teaching, being up here in front of this microphone, is, yeah, you don't know what you're going to say. Sometimes I feel I'm going to say a really challenging talk, a deep talk. I come and sit here thinking I'm going to do that, but I just can't do it. And sometimes I wonder why. And it's because I'm not teaching you. I'm not talking to you. I'm talking with you. Having a relationship of a speaker to an audience. You know, that's sometimes why you often see me scanning, finding, you know, looking into your eyes, finding, just getting some feedback from you. Not just with your eyes, but feeling what you're up to. And that means that, you know, it's not planned. And as I always do in these talks, that, okay, make it a little bit deeper. Your meditation. Many people, we learn about our emotional world. It's all about the relationship you have to your own body and your own mind. Don't bully your mind. Because sometimes we feel the mind is the owner of the body. And we exploit it. Come on, sit up straight. Come on. Ajahn Brahm, you're a senior monk, you shouldn't fall asleep in the Saturday afternoon meditation. Ajahn Brahm, you should never tell those silly jokes. Ajahn Brahm. No, I'm kind to my body. I'm kind to my mind. I form a relationship to it. Form a relationship to my state of mind. Learn how to be peaceful. Peaceful is not an imposition on your mind. It's not something you do to your mind. It's an expression of your kindness to your mind to give it a break, to give it some peace. Of kindness to your body, just to even scratch during the meditation, even to fall asleep and to snore. It's a kindness to your body and mind. And all of these things is what leads us to a state of peace and happiness. So we don't judge other people. You don't even judge yourself. A, B, C, D, E, and F. What do you get at school? Grading. You know, sometimes A, B, C, D, E, and F. Do you know what they mean? F stands for fantastic. E is excellent. D means delightful. A, arrogant. So you say those little jokes just to sort of take away this idea that because you're an A kid, A class, A monk, A whatever, but just, you know, somehow you're sort of superior and you can exploit others underneath you. And sometimes that's where we have the problem with abuse. You know, if somebody, actually we actually do, if you ever read those newsletters, every now and again the newsletters are online, you know, I remember I wrote some articles years ago about the Vinaya, the rules for monks and nuns. That, you know, we take this role on voluntarily. If we need to leave, we leave. But we can't exploit that role. We try and keep it open. So that's why many of you can go on into my room, my personal quarters. How many of you have visited my bedroom? Wow, look at all of these people. That's my cave. That's where I live. So where was I last night? In my bedroom. In my cave. And it's a nice, simple place, so let people come in and say, this is me, this is how I live. So, an openness there. You know, that makes me feel much freer. You know, sometimes I feel what it must be like if, you know, if you want to be a monk, but that's not who you are, with your acting it out, just playing a role. That must be just so impossible for people, so difficult. You know, if you're sitting up here, you're not, you know who you are. That's why when any of the other monks, when these two ever get in front of this microphone and give a talk, which I hope they will one day, and when they come give a talk, be honest. You got failings, difficulties. Tell people about them. And then realize that, you know, you're a normal human being. Being at peace with who you are. Not trying to be sort of just like, you know, the Buddha, or just like an Ajahn Chah, or just like, for goodness sake, don't try and be like an Ajahn Brahm. Those of you, some of them tell the stories and stuff. But just learn how to be at peace with yourself. Form that relationship to your own body, your own mind, your own meditation. Don't judge, don't exploit. Then you have something which, you know, you can transfer into every other relationship you have with your life, never needing to exploit, never needing to get to that point where someone else is there just for your own gratification. Where someone there is, you know, just an object for you, someone else is to be owned, exploited. The whole idea of ownership goes totally against not me, not mine, not a self. This beautiful sense of openness, stillness, peace, which you get not by, even in your meditation I'm supposed to be talking about, not exploiting your mind, not forcing it, being kind to it, making peace with it. If you make peace with your mind, oh, my poor mind, it's just, you know, been really busy, it's tired, you can fall asleep, fine. And then you wake up, the kindness is what cures. Creates a sense of deep peacefulness, a stillness, it really opens up. And that becomes a deep spiritual path. A path where you need nothing. Where you can be at peace with yourself and at peace with all others. And I know that somebody told the old joke earlier about, oh, the idea of being celibate priests or celibate monks was only a transcription error when old ancient texts, it really means celebrate. No, why to say celebrate and celibate are different? Say celebrate, celibacy, if that's who you are. Celebrate being gay, lesbian, if that's who you are. Celebrate being heterosexual, if that's who you are. Celebrate. And don't think that somehow or other you're lesser than any other human being. Be you. Unfortunately, that when you follow that, you tend to disappear anyway. And there's no one left. Oh, what bliss. End of the talk. Da da da. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, what have we got here? Okay. Okay. Andrew, Australia, what do you think the biggest global feminist issue is? What do you think is the biggest challenge for the generation of women behind us? What on earth are you asking me that question for? Why does that question have to be decided by a man? So, that answers that question. Hopefully, see, just, I don't know, you tell me. In Sri Lanka, can we stop ourselves from being angry and affected by the stories of women being mistreated and abused? It's also just well documented, if you what's obvious, like a sense of equity, a sense of equal respect to all beings, then you don't tend to get, that stops people being mistreated and abused. Even I remember Ali Hirsht Ali, she was a Muslim lady born in, I think, where was it? It was in Ethiopia or somewhere, Somali. But anyway, she was in Netherlands and got elected to Parliament. I remember reading some of her book. And what she was saying, that the way forward is just give equal, no, opportunities for education especially. Because education was power. And if you have give education equally to all people, no matter what race, religion, nationality, culture, their education, which was, you know, obviously appropriate, not telling people that this is the right way, but telling people to learn all the different right ways in the world. There's hundreds of right ways. So, let all those right ways join together. And mistreated and abused, instead of being angry about it, you always say, rather light a candle than complain or get angry about darkness. So do something, but don't create more anger. And just have a war against abuse. The war that ends all wars, just creates more wars. From Malaysia, my friend has done something illegal, fueled by hurt and anger. How can I help her to stop from continuing this wrong path? Is hurt and anger, just don't be judgmental. Be kind. You can't never really understand why a person would do such a thing. can't. Well, you can always care. That old idea of a doctor, you can't always cure people, you can care for them. Be there for them. Don't know what they've done, but if you can care for them, be a friend to them, then maybe they you won't stop them going on that path, but you'll help them take another path. They choose. Buddhas only show the way. But every person has to walk that way, what they feel is appropriate. And it may be an illegal path. I often say it was strange, but even Nelson Mandela was a terrorist when he was young. Realised it was the wrong way. He blew up buildings for a good cause. Is blowing up stuff ever the right way? Let you decide. I'm not going to pronounce. To me, he wasn't a terrorist. He did a terrorist thing. Doesn't make you a terrorist. If you make a mistake, it doesn't make you stupid. If you steal, it doesn't make you a thief. It makes you a person who's stolen. You're much bigger than that. So, fueled by hurt and anger, you've done something illegal. Can you see further than that hurt and anger? And can you always see that you may have done something illegal, but it doesn't make you a criminal? It makes you a person who's done a crime. But that's so different than being a criminal. There's more to you. Okay, anyway, not quite sure if I answered those questions correctly, but again, just if it makes sense to you, great. If it doesn't, just no need to follow it. Okay, from the audience. Anyone here who wants to say anything? Okay, so hopefully that, you know, saying something like this, hopefully that, it wasn't that many jokes again, but it's a serious matter, and sometimes it's nice to sort of celebrate International Women's Day and just to know that, you know, at least doing something about it. We're not there yet. I don't think we will ever be there, but we can always get closer and closer and closer and closer by feeling in our hearts rather than just having dogmas. What is it I said last week, do you remember? The difference between never allow your faith to stand in the way of truth. Never allow your knowledge to stand in the way of the truth experienced in this present moment. The two types of religions, one which bends the truth to fit the faith, and the other one which bends the faith to fit the truth. Which one would you like to follow? Okay, if you want to, you know, pay respects to Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha.